ACIP, the voice of interventional pain management.
This is Tom Prigge, and thank you for downloading the March 2016 edition of the ACIP podcast. Or perhaps you're listening online. Either way, we appreciate your checking out the podcast. In this edition, we'll tell you about a great way ACIP has come up with to help you make the transition to ICD-10-CM. We'll talk with Nick Autry of Medical Media about an exciting new service for ACIP members. And in the news segment, we'll talk about how opioids cause respiratory problems, the role of antibiotics in treating low back pain, another reason to tell your patients not to smoke, over-the-counter naloxone, and much more. The ACIP podcast is sponsored in part by Medtronic, your partner in personalized pain solutions for patients with musculoskeletal pain, cancer pain, severe spasticity, or chronic pain. To learn more about Medtronic solutions, call 888-638-7627 or visit back.com. The ACIP 18th annual meeting will be held April 15th through the 17th in Dallas in collaboration with the Texas Pain Society. Now, depending on when you are listening to this podcast, there's still time for you to make plans to attend. If you haven't registered yet, please go to our website, ACIP.org, ASIPP.org, and you will see a link for registration as well as a link to make your hotel reservations at the Hyatt Regency Dallas. Get some CMEs, network with other IPM physicians, and visit the vendor booths to see what is new and available to help your practice and your patients. ICD-10-CM is here now, and for many, the transition is difficult. Well, ACIP has something that should make that transition easier for you. It's the ACIP Pocket Guide for ICD-10-CM for IPM practices. The Pocket Guide goes beyond ICD-10-CM coding and helps promote seamless navigation through 2016 and beyond. The book clearly provides direction for clinical coding with assessment and provides guidance on specific coding for each procedure, showing the intricacies and steps to avoid rejections. The Pocket Guide is available individually in either a print or an electronic version for only $250 or bundled together for only $400. You can recover the cost of this book by avoiding mistakes in a single case, so order yours today. Just go to our website, ACIP.org, and you will see the link to the order form. The ACIP podcast is sponsored in part by St. Jude Medical, makers of spinal cord stimulation and radio frequency therapy products. Visit them at professional.sjm.com. And by StimWave, maker of the Freedom Spinal Cord Stimulation System. Find out more about the Freedom Spinal Cord System at www.stimwave.com. Up next, a conversation with Nick Autry of Medical Media about an exciting new service for ACIP members. Stay with us here on the ACIP Podcast. Joining us on the ACIP podcast, we have Nick Autry of Medical Media. Nick is going to tell us about a service that he is teaming up with ACIP to provide to our members. First of all, Nick, thank you for being with us here today.
It's certainly great to be up here in Paducah, Kentucky, and visiting with the great folks at ACIP. It's great to be a part of joining the team to help patient education, and improve practices and drive that bottom line.
Now, if you're trying to place the accent of Nick, you're not from Massachusetts or Brooklyn. Is that correct?
Well, I'm actually from southern New York. Actually, very southern, over in Alabama.
All right. Before we get into what you are going to be offering to our membership, tell us a little bit about Medical Media down there in Alabama.
Well, what we do is we go into physician practice. There's the new television has been a very strong medium for physicians for a lot of years, and you've seen televisions in most practices today, and there's a lot of companies doing excellent jobs at connecting with patients and educating patients. We just take it to a different level where we customize each office to promote the things that they do.
Okay. So it's specialized and targeted, and we have a name for this. The PEN, is it?
Yes, it's Patient Education Network. It's the ACIP Medical Media Patient Education Network, and it has everything to do with interventional pain.
Okay.
And we try to educate patients on the things that they need to know about specific to interventional pain and how to get the help that they're looking for.
Now, there are six goals? No, I'm getting that wrong. What is it?
We target six different topics.
Six topics, okay.
Okay, they are inform.
Okay.
Educate. Engage. Entertain. Inspire. And interact.
Okay. Let's take those one at a time. Inform and educate, kind of the same, I would think. What do you mean by that?
Okay. Well, we look at it, we kind of break it down in a couple of different things. Number one, inform. Every physician's office that you go into, there'll be a sign that says, states their copay policy or their prescription policies. And seldom do you see anything about the credentials of the physicians. The amazing thing is some of these physicians have done so much in their lifetime to achieve so many different goals and have so much education, you don't ever know how much they've achieved unless you've gone back to their personal offices and you see all their accolades.
Okay.
Well, we try to make sure that that's a point. In the videos that we do and the things we put on the television, that they need to be recognized. That staff needs to be recognized for, what all they've experienced as well as their talents, skills, and abilities.
Okay, so there is a difference then. I see the difference between inform and educate. So it's inform about the practice, but then educate on medical issues?
Well, what we do there is we try to customize the videos where the physician or their staff members is addressing the things they offer at their practice. You won't see on a pain physician's, interventional pain physician's screen, things that might be relative to an OBGYN's practice.
Sure. Okay.
Or just a general practitioner's practice. We target exactly what that physician does. And we do 1 to 2 minute videos of them discussing their procedures with their patients to give them the education they need and have confidence in the treatments.
Now, number three on this list of six is engage. What do you mean by that?
We try to create an environment on these videos where the patient is watching and ideas and things are coming in their mind to trigger thoughts that they need to talk to their physician about. One of my famous stories is a very good friend of mine, Dr. Sandy Silverman, called me the first week we put his screen up in Pompano Beach, Florida. He had a patient that was coming into his office for an epidural treatment, been a patient of his for a long time. He gets he had just done his videos, and they were running on the TV in his office. One of the videos was about migraine headaches.
Okay.
Well, when he walks into the exam room, all of a sudden, the patient says, "Hey, Dr. Silverman, I want to ask you about migraine headaches." And he said, "Well, who do you know has migraine headaches?" And she says, "Well, I do." He says, "Well, why didn't you ever told me?" The patient said, "Why didn't you ever ask?"
Okay.
So Dr. Silverman called me excited about this because now he has another procedure.
Right.
And picked this up the first week he installed our screens. So that's what we try to do. We're educating the patient, engaging that patient, and while we're doing that, we're driving that bottom line for the physician.
Entertain is on this list. Some of the information can sometimes be dry, but you try to present it in a palatable way, I would guess.
Well, we create our own medical moments to try to hit on a lot of different topics that's going to be interesting with the patients. We produce trivia, produce a number of different things. We even have a little puppet program that we create that helps entertain patients, maybe bring a smile to their face or a chuckle in their laugh. But things that's going to be relative to their medical treatment.
Okay. Inspire.
Inspire. We found that many physicians have ready patients that want to tell their story. Every day, these physicians across this country are doing miraculous things to improve the lives and the quality of care and quality of life for these people. And these patients want to talk about it. So we try to take those different procedures and say, listen, would you like to have somebody speaking on your behalf or one of your patients come in and give a testimonial? We have a lot of testimonials. If the physician does not have someone, we have a lot of opportunities to go back to a particular disease state or a situation where we have success stories. You know, we never hear about the success stories. We always hear the bad stuff.
Well, right.
We want to try to inspire those patients while they're sitting there in the office.
And is there an interactive component to this?
Absolutely. The interesting thing about this, Tom, is we're in a society that everything is interactive. Self-service, touch, press this button, do this, do that. Well, a statistic we found was 3 out of every 4 people in a doctor's waiting room is texting. Texting has become what everybody does in the form of communication.
Right.
So we created a model where they could see something on the screen, they could text a number and put that information, and it comes right back to their phone, literally a library of whatever that physician or that device, pharmaceutical, or lab company wants that patient to know about, better educate them. It's right there on the phone.
So the patients are not necessarily passive viewers. They actually become involved.
Oh, absolutely. And we can do patient satisfaction surveys, which insurance companies love, hospitals love, but they can do things on their phones that they may send you a message that you may not ever get in person. A lot of people are... We live in a society that does texting and emailing, and we don't talk to each other like we used to.
Okay, so let's get into some of the nitty-gritty details of how this is going to work. Let's pretend I'm Dr. Tom, and I am interested in this service. What do I need to do? How would you approach to get this installed at my practice?
Okay, what we do, we will have webinars that you could subscribe to or get invited on, and we could explain the whole program to you and point by point, and that announcement will be forthcoming. But basically, what you do is you would speak with one of our representatives or myself, and just schedule a time. We put up a generic loop for you immediately. We give you topics that you can speak on, and we have scripts for you that we use as templates for you to say whatever you want to on your medical moment.
So there's some hardware that you come in and attach to an existing television. Is that correct?
That's exactly right. We have a computer that runs on Wi-Fi that is all remotely driven out of our our office in Auburn, Alabama. And the neat thing about it, you could update, you can send me any information you want via email, and moments later, it's already on your screen. So we can process things pretty quickly. The other thing is, once you contact us and subscribe to the program, we not only put a TV, put the computer, install it, we come on site and give you a two-hour video session on your practice, what you do, and then and those videos you can put on the website, you can put on YouTube. We try to help you drive the bottom line of your practice, increase the revenue by having this interactive process play in your waiting room.
So this is this helps the bottom line, helps the patients. You know, I think I know that the stereotypical waiting room of any doctor's office is the one that has Time magazine saying Jimmy Carter elected president. Okay, you know, really old magazines. But with this, the content can be almost instantaneously updated.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, we're putting things on there every day to entertain, engage, and with the patient. But the neat thing about it is I like to tell stories about what happens. I went to a physician's office down in South Florida, and my introduction to him was when he stormed into the waiting room, picked up a magazine, and threw it in the garbage can and says, "I do not want any of my patients reading that article again. We do not do that here. I don't believe in that." And that was my introduction to him. Now, the neat thing about this, you control the content.
Okay.
This is you don't have competitors on there or something that you don't believe in. You select your topics, and we build our whole program around you and these topics. That's what separates us.
So every office could be completely different. You could have 100 different clients of medical media and the ACIP PEN, Patient Education Network, and all 100 of them could have much of the same content, but some different content that isn't on the other one.
This is like having a full-time sales representative talking about you in your waiting room.
All right. We're going to have information on our website on how to get in touch with you, but tell the folks what's your website and email so that they can get in touch with you after they've heard this and they're interested in finding out more.
Okay. Our website is medicalmedia.us. Medicalmedia.us, United States.
So, okay.
Or just U.S. So you can look on that, and also you can reach us at info@medicalmedia.us.
All right. Great. I appreciate you coming on the podcast, and we certainly look forward to our relationship with Medical Media and hope that our ACIP members will take advantage of this new program.
We're excited about it. The best part about it, it is completely free to the ACIP members. And, in fact, we pay each member $1,000 a year in rent for that wall space that we put the TV on.
That's the nice kicker right there. You're paying them.
That's exactly right.
All right, fantastic. Thanks so much, Nick, for talking with us here on the ACIP podcast.
Thank you, Tom. Great to be here.
It's time for the news segment of the podcast, where we take a look at selected pain-related and general medical news. One of the dangers of opioids, especially opioid overdoses, is respiratory depression. Researchers at the University of Toronto have discovered a channel in the brains of mice where opioids interfere with breathing. When mice without a specific subunit of a particular potassium channel in the medulla were given overdoses of opioids, they continued to breathe normally. The researchers, Richard Horner and Gaspard Montedon, published their findings in an online first edition of the journal Anesthesiology. Their discovery could result in eventually stopping overdose deaths. While on the subject of opioid overdoses, the grocery chain Kroger has announced they will start selling naloxone over-the-counter without a prescription. More than 200 Kroger pharmacies in Ohio and northern Kentucky will sell the opioid antagonist. Joining Kroger in selling OTC naloxone is pharmacy chain CVS. CVS will sell the drug in its Ohio locations. For years, there has been criticism about the number of children who take medication for attention deficit hyperactivity disorder. Researchers have now found that children who take ADHD medications have lower bone mineral density in their femurs, femoral necks, and lumbar spines. The medicines in question are Ritalin, Focalin, Dexedrine, Strattera, and Vyvanse. From 2007 to 2011, there was a 28% increase in children taking these medications. Researchers looked at over 5,000 pediatric patients in the CDC's National Health and Nutrition Examination Survey. They compared those taking the ADHD drugs with those who were not. Almost one quarter of those who took an ADHD medication met criteria for osteopenia, a significantly higher number than those not taking the drugs. Now, no definite link has ever been established between osteopenia in childhood and osteoporosis in adulthood. The findings were presented at the 2016 annual meeting of the American Academy of Orthopedic Surgeons. Exercise is good for cardiac health, right? Well, it depends. Evidence is now growing that high levels of intense exercise might be cardiotoxic. It can also lead to permanent changes in the heart's structure, which can in turn lead to arrhythmias. An article written by Dr. Andre LaGersh, the head of sports cardiology at the Baker IDI Heart and Diabetes Institute in Melbourne, Australia, and published in the Canadian Journal of Cardiology, questions the conventional wisdom that athletes who suffer a cardiac event do so because of a previously undiagnosed underlying condition. He cites that all therapies have a dose-response relationship. If exercise is viewed as a therapy, then, like any therapy, when given at a high dose, the risk increases for adverse events. According to Dr. LaGersh, quote, "The answers regarding the healthfulness of extreme exercise are not complete, and there are valid questions being raised." We don't normally give financial advice here on the ACIP podcast, but you might want to consider making a long-term investment in eyeglasses. According to a study in the journal Ophthalmology, by the year 2050, 5 billion people, half of the world's population, will be short-sighted, also called nearsighted and medically known as myopia. In addition, 1 billion will be at a significant risk of blindness. The study's authors, who are from the Brian Holden Vision Institute at the University of New South Wales in Australia and the Singapore Eye Research Institute, blame environmental factors, including the fact that people now spend less time outdoors and more time in close work activities. They warned that this could be a major public health problem in the years to come. You probably have told your patients who smoke to stop smoking just on general health principles. Well, now smoking has been linked to neck problems. Smoking appears to accelerate and worsen the normal wear and tear that cervical discs go through. The findings were presented at the recently held Association of Academic Physiatrists annual meeting in California. Lead investigator Dr. Michael Levitt of Emory University in Atlanta says that smoking damages blood vessels that discs need for their nourishment. Previous research has linked smoking with lumbar disc degeneration, but this is the first study that has made the link to the cervical region. Where are all the PAs going these days? Evidently not to primary care. Duke University's Duke Health reports in the journal Medical Care Research and Review that physician assistants are entering specialty care rather than primary care. It has always been expected that as the population ages, PAs would fill the expected shortage in primary care providers. But in 2014, 75% of PAs were employed in specialty care, and 82% of the job postings that year were for specialty positions. With the overwhelming majority of PAs opting not to enter primary care, due in part to the greater number of openings in specialty care, new strategies will need to be developed to address the expected increase in demand for primary care services. As a class of drugs, antibiotics are among the most prescribed medications. A clinical study is underway in Australia to determine if antibiotics can be an effective treatment for low back pain. The thesis they are testing is that some low back pain is due to spinal infection. An injured disc can be infected by bacteria in the bloodstream, leading to ongoing pain and prevention of healing. The researchers realized that treating low back pain with antibiotics might be difficult because some patients have an antibiotic resistance. The clinical trial was inspired by the researchers' systematic review that found evidence of spinal bacteria in patients with low back pain, as well as a Danish report of encouraging findings for the use of antibiotic treatment in low back pain. Researchers at Hiroshima University in Japan have identified a specific molecule involved with continuing pain after a nerve injury. What's more, they have succeeded in blocking this molecule in mice. Mice with injured sciatic nerves were given multiple injections of a drug that blocks a molecule known as HMGB1. After the injections, the mice exhibited less pain. A single injection of a drug that blocks a different molecule, known as MMP-9, had the same analgesic effect. Their results were reported in the Journal of Neurochemistry. Taking a blood sample via a finger prick is certainly more convenient than from a vein. However, it turns out those finger prick samples might not be very reliable. Researchers from Rice University have found that drop-to-drop variations in some blood measurements are far greater than drops taken from a venous extraction. For example, granulocyte count in finger prick drops were more than 7 times higher for successive drops over the same measurement of successive venous drops. Other blood measurements also show differentials. Writing in the American Journal of Clinical Pathology, the authors warn, quote, "These data suggest caution when using measurements from a single drop of finger prick blood." And finally, new research is giving hope to overcoming autism. Autism's causes are many, but one, caused by a missing gene known as SHANK3, looks as though it can be reversed. SHANK3 is a gene critical for brain development. In a marine study, MIT researchers were able to turn this gene back on in genetically engineered mice whose SHANK3 gene had been turned off while they were embryos. When turned back on later, the mice, who had been exhibiting repetitive behavior and social interaction avoidance, had these behaviors reversed. Their full findings can be found in the journal Nature. The ACIP podcast is sponsored in part by Medtronic, your partner in personalized pain solutions for patients with musculoskeletal pain, cancer pain, severe spasticity, or chronic pain. To learn more about Medtronic solutions, call 888-638-7627 or visit back.com. We try to end every podcast on a lighter note. Earlier in the podcast, we told you about the new ICD-10-CM pocketbook that ACIP has for sale. And while the changeover to ICD-10 certainly has not been amusing for most of you, some of the new codes are, shall we say, strange. During the debate about ICD-10, I learned a new word, granularity, which has to do with being very detailed. ICD-10 codes were created to be specific, very specific, sometimes so specific as to be comical. Here's a few actual ICD-10 codes that seem unnecessarily specific. Pedestrian on foot, injured in collision with roller skater, subsequent encounter. Now, perhaps there's another code for the roller skater, and while this is certainly specific, the phrase pedestrian on foot is also redundant. What makes a pedestrian is being on foot. Here's another one. Swimming pool of prison as the place of occurrence of the external cause. Now, that would be a very specific population. Prisoners in a swimming pool. Problems in relationship with in-laws. Now, that's the opposite. That would be a very general population, almost everyone. Prolonged stay in weightless environment. Now, this might be the most specific one of all. Extremely specific. Who is in a weightless environment but an astronaut? And finally, burn due to water skis on fire. Subsequent encounter. Exactly how do water skis catch on fire? Just one of the many mysteries of life, I guess. The ASIP podcast is sponsored in part by StimWave, maker of the Freedom Spinal Cord Stimulation System. Find out more about the Freedom Spinal Cord Stimulation System at stimwave.com. And by St. Jude Medical, makers of spinal cord stimulation and radiofrequency therapy products. Visit them at professional.sjm.com. Well, that's it for this episode of the ASIP podcast. Thank you once again to Nick Autry of Medical Media for talking with us about the ASIP Medical Media Patient Education Network. Thank you also to our sponsors, Medtronic, St. Jude Medical, and StimWave. We'd like to hear from you. I say this on every podcast, but this time, send me an email. Tell me what you think of the ASIP podcast. Email is very simple. It's just Tom, T-O-M, at ASIP, A-S-I-P-P dot O-R-G. Thank you for listening, and join us again next month for another ASIP podcast.